We are in Hollywood, California, talking with a man who is in the Chicago area, a legend in his own time, as far as Chicago is concerned. He's a fellow who started bringing some imagination and creativity to Chicago area radio at a time when radio itself was starting to lose some of its imagination and creativity in the early 1950s. Our guest is Bob Arbogast. And Bob, from all of the people who remember what you did in Chicago in the 50s, would you say hello?
Oh, I'd rather not at this time, for obvious reasons.
But we thank you very much, and we're going back now to our studio.
Thank you very much for having me here. So long, Dave.
Okay. I can see where we're going with this right off the bat. This is the way it has been since we first met a little while ago. Bob, when did you come to Chicago?
Oh, let's see. I'm really trying to remember. I think October 51 from Kansas City. I mean, we started on the air there. I think we got there in August of 51 and we were looking for work because we had read in Weekly Variety that Garraway had left Chicago. And the headline said, "Garraway's departure leaves a hole big enough to drive a truck through." It was a pretty long headline, covered about four pages. And so we thought, hey, why don't we go there? Because we'd just been fired in Kansas City. And you could ask me why, I'd probably tell you.
Why?
Oh, I'd rather not go into that. We used to play the theme song. You may recall the Sicilian Tarantella that was our theme song in Chicago. And one night in Kansas City, I introduced it as the Egyptian National Anthem. And the man who owned the station, who was about 85 years old and a crank, he's dead now, I'm sort of glad, he said that we offended all the Egyptians in the Kansas City area, and there were probably quite a few.
Because
Kansas City's a notorious Egyptian
population. How many Egyptians would you estimate there were in the Kansas City area?
Well, at that time there was King Farouk and his mistress, I guess. I don't know. He was visiting, staying at the Muehlbach Hotel with Harry Truman. No, there probably weren't any, but they threw us off the station.
Let's roll back a little bit. Now, where did you hail from originally?
I grew up here in Los Angeles. I was born in Bellingham, Washington, got to L.A. when I was two, and then moved after my illustrious career in the Navy, in which we fought the enemy with great distinction and success, in that we triumphed over evil, or whatever happened.
Which side were you on?
I was the Japanese area. And we were okay for a while, then they got turned around at Midway, and then I haven't been able to get work since. So then I went to the University of Arizona on a tennis scholarship, and subsequently, while there, I was doing news broadcasts over the campus PA system and fooling around with the news because no one was listening anyway, except that the assistant instructor, who was Pete Robinson, and who later became my partner in Chicago, used to listen to me messing around and said, "Why don't we do a radio show?" So we did in Tucson. And then the owner of a station in Kansas City, not the guy who was objecting to the Egyptian National Anthem, heard us and hired us, and we went there. And then the thing happened with the National Anthem, and then we drove to Chicago and happened to come at a perfect time when they needed something, and we were there. And for some reason, Homer Heck, who still works in Chicago in the advertising business, liked us, and over the protests of his immediate superior, he managed to get us hired, and we were glad. Because George Heinemann, who was over Homer Heck at the time, didn't understand us at all.
Well, now, there are a few of our listeners today who were not in the Chicago area back in the 50s when you came.
Where the devil were they living?
Well, they were probably Egyptians in Kansas City.
Well, I can see why. Okay.
How would you describe what you did on radio in those days? You know, what kind of, comedy, but what kind of comedy was it?
Well, I suppose if there were a parallel, I guess it's pretty much like Bob and Ray, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I never thought it was quite that good because I sort of thought Bob and Ray were about as good as you can get doing two-man stuff. But we were in that area, and not derivative really because we'd never heard them until later on, but it just happened that we had the same kind of approach to doing satire on stuff, political in nature or programs or commercials or whatever, and yeah, that was pretty much it.
Well, did you have to audition for NBC in Chicago to get this spot? You were on at night, I think, around 10:30. weren't you? 10:30?
Yeah, we wound up being on for a half an hour a night, which sounds ridiculous to people now because that's unheard of, being on a half an hour. I mean, you know, but it was full production and it was like a show rather than like a disc jockey thing. Yeah, we auditioned with a disc, one of those old gigantic acetates that we had from Kansas City. And I think it was really a matter of WMAQ at that time not having anything to put on. And they were really desperately searching. They were ready to throw on anything. And we got on and happened to work, you know. But I think there weren't a lot of people looking at that time because radio seemed to be going under.
Mm-hmm.
Television was starting to take over. We may have been, other than Bob and Ray, who are still working, I guess, in New York and maybe some stuff in Boston and on whatever networks are left, there aren't many things like that still being done. And at that time, people were shying away from radio, I think, and getting into TV, which I never could understand. I don't really like TV as a performer or a writer or a viewer. I really don't care for TV very much at all, except possibly for things like the Olympic Games and the conventions.
Well, when you...
Howdy Doody reruns.
Howdy's coming back.
I know. I've heard.
When you came in on the scene, though, you were in radio at a time when television was getting very much involved, you know, with the public as far as that was concerned.
Yeah.
But by the time... When you were on around 10:30 at night, television was tossing in the towel for the day. There was not much on except some old movies.
Well, and Dorsey Connors.
Dorsey Connors and her...
Tom Duggan. Dorsey Connors had the...
Remember P.J. Hoff and Fahey Flynn doing the weather?
No.
You don't remember that?
Yes, I do. And who's the guy? Oh, I was thinking the guy who played the piano. Oh, Tony Weitzel was on then.
Herbie Mintz, right.
Yeah, I really used to like him.
But not forgotten.
I sort of liked Herbie Mintz in a weird way.
He passed away a couple of years ago in Florida.
I didn't know that. Yeah, he was a nice man.
He retired to Florida and did a little bit down there.
I also actually liked Jack Eigen as a person. People will find that hard to believe, but I really liked him. He was really nice to us.
When you were in NBC in Chicago, was Eigen there doing his... was he doing the Shea Perry show at that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He followed us and was a very easy act to follow. And he used to sit next to us at the desk in Chicago, and people would assume that our personalities would not be at all alike. But I found him to be a really warm guy, and he was sort of helpful to us in a weird way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whatever that means.
Well, I think he enjoyed helping other people because, you know, it was Fred Allen who mentioned Eigen's name on radio.
That's right.
Every
That's
week,
right.
just about, you know.
Yeah.
So, and he always talked about that.
Yeah. How is he doing?
He's in Florida now, too.
No kidding.
And he left NBC, and NBC. You have any idea what NBC in Chicago is doing today?
The last I heard, and I guess this was about 1967, I think it was the last time I went back there for a vacation. No, 69, right. They were rocker, weren't they?
More or less. Now, today, they are a major country and western station.
That's...
All country and western.
Probably better than being a rocker, in a way. I can understand the words, anyway. You know.
Some of the things that you developed with Pete Robinson, you said he was an instructor of yours.
Yeah, he was the assistant... He was a student, but he was assistant instructor in the radio department at the University of Arizona.
And the two of you joined forces in Kansas City, came to Chicago on NBC, and you had the Arbogast show.
Oh, yeah. Whatever happened?
That's exactly what I'm about to ask.
Okay.
Whatever happened to the Arbogast show? How long were you on?
From the previously mentioned October 51 until August of 54. We asked for a raise because we were making a monumental amount of money, I think 140 a week, 115 maybe, I can't remember. Mm. We went into the guy and said, well, we've been here about 3 years now, and our ratings are really very good. In fact, one time recently we were number one, which is unheard of in radio there, because Ed Murrow was on opposite us, and it was kind of hard to beat. And the guy said, well, okay, if you don't get the raise, what? And I said, well, we'll probably, as a matter of principle, have to leave. And he said, yeah, that'd be good.
So, just like that?
Well, sort of, more or less, yeah. So we left.
Didn't they feel there was any value to your kind of programming? That they, you know?
Yeah, a lot of the people did at the station. Mm-hmm. The guy in charge didn't, and that's primarily the story of my life in radio a lot. I don't mean to sound bitter, but frequently managers of stations, no offense to whoever is a manager of your station, if indeed you're not, yourself,
I'm
I don't
not.
Even know that. they aren't necessarily in tune with humor. They're generally from the sales departments of radio stations, and sales department personnel I found are kind of geared to making money a lot, and they're not very funny.
Yet you had many commercials in your shows, sufficient commercials to pay for it, didn't you?
Well, I'd have to say, in all modesty, probably that was because we had good ratings, so the salesman mm-hmm. didn't have much difficulty selling us. You know,
what were some of the things that you did on the air? I know you seemed like you were the nation's number one fans of Eartha Kitt at the time.
You know, really?
You play,
well, I think
Escudara.
Pete liked Eartha Kitt a lot. I didn't very much. But that she's probably good. It just wasn't my kind of singing.
But, Pete, but we heard Eartha Kitt with all that constantly on.
Well, I sold out because Pete was in charge of the music, and I said, do what you want. I don't care. As long as we can play Count Basie now and then, and Carmen McRae, I didn't care. You know, Sarah Vaughan, those things.
Can you remember some of the sketches that you did?
No. Can you?
Well, I can remember.
I'm really trying to remember. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. What did you do when you left Chicago then? And did you just leave this kind of programming?
We came out here mm-hmm. to Los Angeles together with an eye toward doing it in Los Angeles, and were totally unsuccessful. I wound up driving a truck for a subsidiary of Lockheed, and Pete wound up, after some searching, as assistant program director at ABC Television. And by that time, I had gone on to New York to write a television show for Tom Poston, who was one of the original Steve Allen group, mm-hmm. like Louie Nine, Tom Poston, Gabe Dell, Dayton Allen, and so on. He had a variety show on WABC-TV in New York, and I wrote for that for a year while waiting for something to open out here, which I assumed would happen because Pete was going to knock down several thousand doors. And he did, and I got a job as a producer and writer at KABC Television in Los Angeles, and I stayed there for a long time writing a bunch of shows. Some of which you may
shows.
Have seen.
Mm-hmm.
One was really a good one, a kind of a labor of love. We all got together and, being jazz fans, put on a network show that lasted about 8 months. It was very good, really, with Bobby Troup as the host, called Stars of Jazz, and it won a couple of Emmys, and mm-hmm. that was nice. And I liked that. And then a show called Traffic Court, which was successful out here, that led to a whole bunch of other court shows, one of which I was involved with on the ABC network called Day in Court. I didn't care for that too much, but I was doing it, making money, and that was okay. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got into the other areas of broadcasting, probably not happily, because I would rather perform, rather do radio than anything. There's really not...
Satire was your thing.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, uh-huh. I guess so.
You got involved in a few years ago, I picked up a record album called Sunday Morning at the Funnies, I think, or Sunday Morning with the Funnies. And I think Gary Owen
Yes.
had something to do
yeah,
with that.
Right. Yeah, I
your
think
name
Gary
was on the album. I think you performed on it.
I performed on it with a whole bunch of other people. I think Gary wrote most of
mm-hmm.
it. Yeah.
Taking off on the comic strip characters on radio, mostly.
Yeah.
Orphan
yeah.
Annie's Song and
Superman.
Comics and Superman.
Gangbusters.
And all of that sort of thing, yeah.
And that album made, by actual count, I made 47 cents. But I got the session fee. It was $135. So it was $135.47, and I still have that check at home because I don't ever cash any of my checks. I'm independently wealthy as a result of driving the truck to the Lockheed subsidiary.
What are you doing today?
I was messing around. I came over and talked to this guy who was going to interview me. And
yes.
today in the
today,
generic
these days.
Sense
right.
or whatever generic means. I'm performing in a lot of commercials on camera, and writing a lot of stuff. I've been writing since 1968 for Sesame Street.
Oh.
If you can believe that. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing currently for a show called The Big Blue Marble, which is kind of an offshoot of Sesame Street, not by the same people who put Sesame Street out, but it's a little bit updated, possibly more sophisticated thing that's sponsored by ITT, the Illinois Transit Towers. Or whatever,
the
ITT.
Twin Towers.
Illinois Twin Towers.
Right.
And that's been really gratifying, especially the Sesame Street mm-hmm. part, because I was in on the ground floor of that, where they didn't know what exactly they wanted to do, and about five of us out here sat down and said, here's what you should do, you guys. And we wrote a bunch of things that were later animated and kind of paved the way for the way the show has gone mm-hmm. since. And I'm still doing voices for that a lot. In fact, if you listen to Sesame Street ever, which I'm sure you do all the time.
We have it on in our house.
I really do because I like Bert and Ernie and the Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
The Bert and Ernie and the Muppets are the funniest things on television. The Muppets are really funny, but nobody knows that. And I've been involved with that, doing voices and things since 1968, still am, and that's one of the things in my life that I like most of all that I've done because it really is worthwhile, I think.
So, could you see a spot for an Arbogast show again, as you had in Chicago in those days?
Oh, yes. You know,
could something like that work today?
Yeah, I really believe it could. I don't believe it'll ever happen, at least not in Los Angeles, because the radio picture here is dismal at best. There's some pretty fine performers, mm-hmm. but they're locked into dumb formats that seem to be consistent across the country. Gary Owens was really a very bright guy and doing really funny stuff, is surrounded by traffic reports and thousands of commercials and rotten music, and I don't know how he stands it, but he still manages to come through with very funny things. Mm-hmm. And there's another guy out here named Dick Whittington mm-hmm. on the NBC radio outlet, they're very creative guys, but they're locked into that format, and nobody seems to want to approach radio from the point of view that it was approached in the past, and that's kind of sad, because I think there is a lot of room for good things, but I don't believe it'll ever happen again. I really don't.
I wanted to ask if you guys ever went over to the Chicago Theater. In the early 50s, they used to get the disc jockeys to MC the stage shows at the Chicago or the Oriental, and Eddie Hubbard used to go over there and... Ernie Simon, Simon?
Sure. Ernie's passed away.
Yes.
Good man.
Did you ever get involved in that sort of a thing?
No, they asked me one time if I would come over and MC the Harvest Moon mm-hmm. Ball, and I said no.
And so you didn't?
No, I didn't do that.
But you did get stuck with the Harvest Moon Ball on NBC.
Yeah, that's why we didn't want to go over and MC it. Actually, it wasn't too bad on the show, uh-huh. except, yes, it was. Come on, what am I talking about? It was terrible.
It didn't fit at all with what you were doing.
No, it wasn't our format.
But you had to run through some of the finalists, pianists and the singers. And
they were okay, except for just the idea of saying, and now from Elgin, Illinois, Shirley Zeppo singing, How's Your Foot? And we couldn't, you know, it didn't matter. Who cared? I guess they cared.
You couldn't do much comedy with all of that stuff.
Well, no, we tried, and it didn't work at all.
With the comedy that you did in those years that you were in Chicago... and you're very casual about it today, as you recall it, but it was...
I was really trying to recall when you asked me some of the stuff we did, and I really can't remember. We did so much stuff every night. That was really a job.
You wrote it all yourself,
yeah,
mostly
we'd start
that
writing,
evening, didn't you?
We'd start writing about 3 in the afternoon mm-hmm. and finish about 6. I mean, it was really incredible. I couldn't do that now. When I sit down to write something now that's a minute long mm-hmm. for Sesame Street or something... it takes me about a day. But then we were under the gun and we had to have stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, in looking back at our old script books, some of the stuff was pure drivel. It really was. It had to be. Some was good.
Yeah. You know, well, it's all fun, though.
Well, it was really fun.
And,
was,
you know, one of the things that marked it as being really, really good for the listener was the fact that you guys were both having a good time with it.
Except, yeah, mostly.
I mean, it came across
as though we were
having fun.
We actually were, because we had no idea from... the conception of the idea, whatever that mm-hmm. was, at 3 o'clock until 6, how it would play, and everything was tested immediately before people, whether it was a live audience, which we had from time to time, or immediately from mm-hmm. Our peers sitting in the booth, and we could tell from their reactions whether it was being good or bad. And we didn't know. You know, it was kind of fun in that way.
You worked right with a sound effects man.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you had all of it. You had the first-rate... NBC sound department working with you there.
Yeah, and they
a lot
were
of that
so
was original stuff. I mean, it wasn't all tape recorded or...
No, they did live effects, mm-hmm. and they were so happy to be doing stuff yeah. because there was nothing at that time, zero for them to do. All the soaps had moved out, practically all of them, and they were just delighted to be working on anything live. So were we.
You know? Didn't they work with you a little bit while you were writing
yes.
the material?
Yeah.
Because you just... Sometimes you... We had the chance that... A friend of mine and myself had a chance to visit you back in the 50s there.
You've really changed.
One night, yeah. yeah. And we stayed with you the whole afternoon and evening as you put together a show, and it was exciting for us to see. And we were certainly starstruck. to watch you guys doing that, and we had hoped one day that we could do that.
And sure enough, we never did. And lo and behold.
Well, no, no. Not really.
Well, you're doing something.
Now, today I'm interviewing you, see, so it's
there must
come
be
back.
A profound emotional thrill for you.
It is. I am.
I'm kind of tightening up, too, just hearing about how we were stars.
We saw you put that stuff together. You guys would ad lib a routine. The sound effects man would add his business to it. And then if it worked, then you'd put it down on paper.
Well, if it didn't work, we had to go with it because we didn't have any more time to write, you know. And, boy, we had a lot of material. And from that material, that's been a gold mine for me in stuff later on when I've had to write radio and television commercials of a humorous nature when people have wanted that, as they do from time to time. I'd go back in the old files and I'd find something that fit, you know, so I didn't have to write. I could get lazy, which I now am.
What are some of the commercials that you've written?
I've never written any.
Humorous.
Never written any commercials at all.
No, I know you've done.
I can't honestly. If you ask me, I've done so many of these things that I can't remember. That's the truth.
Have you ever worked with Stan Freberg?
No.
You never have worked with him.
I saw him once in the men's room at KTLA Television, and I said hi, and he didn't say anything.
Well,
but he didn't know who I was.
You wouldn't call that working with Stan Freberg.
No.
No.
No, it wasn't work at all. Wasn't pleasure. Wasn't
whatever work. Happened to Pete Robinson?
Pete passed away in 1972.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was. He was under tremendous pressure. He had become an executive at Channel 2, CBS. He was a vice president at CBS, and he went on his own for a while and didn't work out too well. He went back to being a vice president at NBC. In between times, he was Jack Warner's assistant at Warner Brothers, and he was in that area of show business that, quite frankly, would tend to kill somebody if he didn't have a certain personality. And Pete was too nice a guy to be a television vice president. You have to be some other kind of character, and I don't know what it is, but you have to have a lot more kind of the ability to survive in the business by hook or crook, by doing what you can to do it. And Pete was much too sensitive for that, and I think eventually that contributed to his demise. I wish he had gotten not into that line of work, what he did, unfortunately. And I was with him two nights before he died at his house at a party. Everything was beautiful. And Sunday I got a call from a friend that he had passed away. It was a big shock.
Not counting the years between now and then, how old were you guys when you were doing that business at NBC in Chicago?
I got to think now. Let's see, 1927 to 24, 25, and 26.
That's 1924,
1925. No, no. No.
Well, I can give it to you a little bit.
Don't
you know,
need
not
this.
In the same category.
You called me over here to do a nice. No, I was 24, 25, and 26 years old, and a heck of a person, and had a nice blonde crew cut, and married a girl from Des Plaines.
From Des Plaines.
That's right. Okay. Who was subsequently found me out and divorced me quite a while ago.
She found you out.
She discovered what I really was.
What is, that's what people always ask. What is Arbogast really like?
I'm a warm, sensitive, tender, giving, very emotional human being with a heart of gold and a virtual tyrant, potential killer, maniac, very human, much like everyone else.
And really honest, too.
Yeah, I pretty much tell the truth most of the time.
I appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule.
Yes, it has been busy. Today I went to the real estate office to clear an escrow and called one of my sons and said, don't forget Friday because we were supposed to play tennis. So I was pretty busy today.
You're quite a tennis player, weren't you?
Yeah,
you?
I still are. Yesterday, I got to tell you, you want to hear this?
Sure.
I have a kid.
I've turned off the tape recording now anyway.
It doesn't matter. Just tell you. I have a whole bunch of boys. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember, four or five, I think. And none of them ever wanted to play tennis. And finally, the youngest one went out on the court with me one day and turned out to be a natural. So I said, wow, I got one. And I started to contribute a little money toward lessons. And we've been playing together for 5 years, and he's never beaten me. And yesterday, he beat me 6-love. And I was so gratified. You can't believe how I felt. I wouldn't show him, and I said, nice going. Oh, good going, punk. I'll catch you next time. But I was so happy. You know, wow. So he really creamed me, so to speak.
Well, that's a good way to be, not to show him that you were so excited and enthusiastic.
I was excited. Yeah. I came home and I told his mother, my second ex-wife from Des Plaines.
Your second ex-wife is from Des Plaines?
Yes, my first ex-wife, however, was not. But I told his mother, who is my second ex-wife, who is from Des Plaines.
Oh,
I said, the kid beat me today. And I said, I smiled. She said, it's about time. She smiled. That's good. Good thing.
Where is your first ex-wife from?
I don't know, hunger or... she's living in Tucson now. You want to give her a call, she'll confirm all this.
Oh, she will.
Everything I've said.
Listeners who have never heard the Arbogast show...
will probably really be looking forward to it.
We'll be looking. We're going to play one at the conclusion
Are you really?
Of this interview.
You have one?
And you will probably... Yes, and you will probably then get a residual check for 47 cents.
From George Heinemann at WMAQ.
George Heinemann, right. Remember George Stone?
Yes,
he worked
yes.
with George on this. He's on a classical music station in Chicago.
Beautiful voice, and should be doing that because I really like
yes.
him. Used to announce for us sometimes, and he had a great sense of humor. Very stuffy voice coming out mm-hmm. saying these funny things.
And you used to really give him the business, too,
yeah.
on those shows.
He was a nice man, really, yeah. all those guys. And whatever happened to Hugh Downs, and whatever happened to
whatever happened
Jack
to
Chancellor, and all, they've all failed.
All those guys started out there.
That's right.
Remember Myron Wallace? Huh?
Yeah, yeah. Later became governor of Georgia.
No.
Alabama?
No.
One of those states.
Peanut farmer in Georgia someplace. Yeah, I guess that's right.
Yeah, boy. Whatever happened to them? And now I'm on top and those guys...
That's right. Never heard of those
all
guys.
All kind of has-been. Well, what the heck.
Thanks, Bob Arbogast. A pleasure to chat with you today.
I know that.